Hello, this is Janet Gallen, and I welcome you to Love Letters Live, where we listen to a personal story and a love letter to follow, because it seems to me that in every experience, every life experience, are the seeds of a love letter to someone, to say thank you, to say I love you, to say I remember you. It doesn't really matter. Love letters are for anyone at any time and for any reason whatsoever. So today I'm going to go to our guest, who is John Cox, visiting here from Oregon. So John, why don't you just tell us about what's important to you in the realm of gratitude and love in your personal life?
Well, I think first of all, of course, I have to talk about my lovely wife, Charlene, and our great children.
How did you meet? How old were you?
We met in 1960 at the University of Oregon.
You were both students there?
We were both students at the time.
Fixed
and
up?
It was a blind date that a good friend of mine and his girlfriend from high school met Charlene while they were in the dormitory. And so we had our first date at a University of Oregon basketball game. And from there...
How did she strike you? What was that like?
She struck me as great.
What about her?
What about her? Well, she's attractive.
Or maybe you want to save that part for your love letter. I don't know.
Well, maybe.
Okay, so tell us how that progressed, how that went.
Well, we dated for a while, and then we had a hiatus where we weren't dating. She found somebody else, and...
Oh.
So I had to sort of beat the door down in order to get her attention.
How did you do that? I think that's nice for our listeners to know, the women as well as the men.
Just persistence.
Even though she was dating someone else.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just let her know I was there.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard for you when she, I mean, how did she say goodbye? Do you remember?
She didn't.
Oh.
I called one time and she was busy, and I called back and she was still busy.
I see. Okay.
So eventually even I got the idea.
So it wasn't like you had been a really solid couple for a long time and then...
No. This was during the initial part of our relationship. So she didn't have any obligation to me at that point, but I kind of thought she was the one I wanted to spend my life with.
So. That's so nice. I mean, in a world of women who say it's hard to find men who want to commit to a lifetime and a marriage and a relationship, it's so nice to hear a man say, I knew right away that she's the one I wanted to spend my life with.
Yeah. Well, this was 50 years ago.
I understand that part. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
So we got back together and dated through our junior and senior years, and then graduated together. I have to add that she was in the Honors College at the University of Oregon, and very bright. She got me through math in college.
Oh, nice.
So she claims that was the reason that I was dating her, but that's not the case.
And after that?
After that, we actually, the weekend that we were married on Saturday, I got commissioned in the United States Army on Sunday, and we graduated on Sunday. And then we spent 2 years on active duty in the Army back at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
So she was an Army wife.
Well, yeah, she would never admit that, but she taught when we were back at...
Public school, is that?
In Fayetteville, North Carolina, right. She taught Spanish and some other courses as well.
So how did your life go from then on?
Well, I decided, having served in the Army, that I would not be a good employee for someone else. And the reason I went into the military, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do at that time. So it gave me a chance to sort of figure out. And after being in the military, I decided I'd go to law school.
What drew you to that?
Well, I was a political science major, which I've always had an interest in international affairs. So I thought, well, maybe I would do something with that. But I didn't want to teach. I had a teaching certificate, but I didn't want to teach. So I figured I'd go to law school.
That's kind of interesting that you didn't want to teach, because I think as far back as I can remember, parents encouraged their children to get teaching credentials so that if something else fell through, they could always have a fallback position and teach. And I think teaching is such a specific art that it shouldn't be a fallback position.
Right.
So to hear somebody say, I didn't want to, what made you know that you shouldn't or that you didn't want to?
Well, I was a
and
student
how honorable,
teacher.
By the way.
I was a student teacher and just knew that controlling the classroom was not something I could handle.
I understand that.
So it was a good experience. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I just knew that that wasn't something I was good at for 25 or 30 years.
That's so nice to hear. I knew that was something I wasn't good at. That's so important in life. So go ahead about law. And
well, so anyway, we came back to law school at Willamette University in Salem. Her parents lived in Salem, and so she had a connection there. She also taught, went back and taught at her old junior high school. And so she got a kick out of that. And then after law school, I thought I wanted to do some trial work, and I got a job with the Lane County District Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. So I was down there for 2 years as a deputy district attorney. And then four other individuals and I started our law firm.
With a specialty in?
Back then, you didn't have a specialty. You took whatever came in the door because you had to pay the bank.
Sure.
So we did, actually we did quite a bit initially criminal work because we'd come from the district attorney's office and we knew the criminal law pretty well. But eventually we branched out and got referrals from either other lawyers or from clients for other work. And so now we're about...
And did you defend?
Yes.
Also,
Yeah, I ended up defending, got appointed by the court to defend a child abuse case. Where a young man killed a 18-month-old baby of his girlfriend, and that was a really tough, tough case.
So. Because it was emotionally so disturbing.
I mean, when you looked at the photos, you just wanted to, you know, it was sickening.
Yes. And that's hard to defend, isn't it? I mean, what do you...
Well, that case in particular was because he had admitted to everybody at the hospital that he had done it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness they didn't have the death penalty at the time in Oregon. So he ended up serving a number of years and then got out and became a business person and contributed back to society. So, I mean, that was one of those stories that, well, I mean, as a taxpayer and owning a business. And
so what do you, I know we're kind of a little off the track here, but it's still your life, so I'm interested. Mm-hmm. What happened that he could kill a child and then become a constructive member of society? What happens to a person?
Well, this may sound like a cliche to your listeners, but that type of behavior is learned behavior. He was abused as a child. And so to him, that was how you punish children. And he just basically got carried away. I mean, it happened over a period of time. It was a classic child abuse syndrome. And I had some experts testify about that, the psychological impact of being abused. And so that didn't excuse his conduct, but at least it helped explain why he did it. I always was wondered why the mother of the child would continue to let that happen. But that goes
His abusing the child up until the point where he killed this child.
Right, Of course, that goes back to her situation where she probably lived in a similar situation.
So that may have been normal-ish to her.
Right, I mean, you know, fathers beat up their children and just didn't realize that it went to the extreme it did, that it ended up in a death.
Did they stay
child.
Married?
I'm being a little gossipy. No, they weren't. They actually weren't married at the time. And after he got out of prison, he met another woman and did not have any children. So,
good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So back to you and Charlene.
Right. Back to me and Charlene. Okay. So we ended up staying in Eugene and raised our two daughters there. She taught at preschool and then ended up teaching, after our children got a little older, she ended up teaching the teen pregnant program in the Springfield School District.
What did that consist of, and good for her?
Well, that was pregnant teenagers who...
Oh, I see, not to prevent the pregnancy, but once they were pregnant.
Correct, yeah, once they had a child, then they came to her course, and basically she was there to help them with any particular subject that they had a problem with.
About raising that child?
No, just academics.
Oh, I see.
And they also had a nursery, and as it turned out, at that point, they had a nursery that was adjacent to the classroom. And so they did, she was able to also teach them about...
So this is to encourage teen mothers not to quit school, at
correct.
Least, I see. I thought maybe it has something to do with encouraging them not to have more children.
Yeah. Well, she tried that too, after the first one.
Yeah.
So it was to help them get through the high school years,
right, so
and also help them raise children. And she had a number of success stories. There were probably more not successful than successful, but it was rewarding for her to work there.
So tell me about what kinds of things you did in your life with her. I know Rotary is a huge part of your life.
Well,
do you feel like telling us a little bit about that?
We pretty much divided up responsibilities. I don't know that we did it consciously.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 28 years in the reserves, military reserves, and so I was gone quite a bit, particularly at least one weekend a month. And then as I got higher in rank, I ended up spending more time. So she basically raised the kids. I was there and assisted with that. But she mainly did that.
Which means what, really? I mean, that's so different from today in a lot of families.
Well, again, raising kids, meaning that she was just there all the time for them, made sure they got to where they needed to go, got them signed up for classes like tap dancing and extracurricular activities. I coached some of their soccer teams.
But you were away a lot, actually, as a reserve person? Is that
well, I wasn't away for long stretches at a time. Maybe each year I would spend 45 total days on reserve duty.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 45 to 60 days, but it wouldn't be at continuous. It would be 2 weeks or 3 weeks here, and then a period of time would go by.
Mm-hmm.
And so during those periods of time, while she was obviously had the main responsibility for the children.
And because that was a different time that long ago, that was okay. I mean, it sounds like the two of you were a kind of a natural couple together forever.
Right. Yeah. I kind of think that we play to each other's strengths.
And what are those?
Well, she is, level-headed,
mm-hmm.
a thinker, and, But as a doer and things that she's good at and wants to do.
And your strengths?
I tend to be a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
She's less outgoing than I am. So if something goes wrong, we have to call somebody and maybe tell them they didn't quite do the job right.
Oh,
that's my responsibility. Uh-huh. She's a great cook,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a great eater.
That's perfect.
Yeah, so it just works out really well, yeah.
Now, what about Rotary? Is that something you do together?
Well, Rotary is something that we did together. She was very, very supportive of me in my role in Rotary. And she came to appreciate Rotary and what it does. So that was helpful. We did a lot.
Can we take a little side trip and tell us about some of the things that...
Well, sure.
You accomplished together in Rotary?
I was...
I happen to know some of those stories, so
yeah,
I think
right.
they're so good.
I was fortunate to be selected to be district governor of Rotary, which is a responsibility, and I had 71 clubs that I was responsible for. In Rotary, the concept is the clubs are the key.
A club is an individual group of people.
Right, yes. It can vary anywhere from 20, 25 to 100 or 275 in some clubs in our area.
And your goal is to make the world better.
And Rotary's goal is to make the world better, yeah.
So what were some of your success stories? Because I know you do that around the world.
Right.
As well as at home?
Yes. Rotary is an international organization, and in fact, it has more clubs in more countries than the United Nations.
Really?
Rotary helped form the United Nations. It was one of the founding groups. And so that international aspect appealed to me.
How old is Rotary?
Rotary is 106 years old.
Uh-huh.
Started in 1905 and has continued since then. In fact, the San Francisco club was the second Rotary club in the world.
Hmm.
So it's called number two because the clubs have numbers based
so,
on
so
their...
So when there's some... How do you know that there's a need somewhere?
Because the Rotarians there
Asia
usually... The Rotarians there. And Rotary has a system where the money that we donate to the Rotary Foundation, half that money comes back to the district that donated it. And we can use that money both locally within our own district... Or we can use it to assist an international project.
Well, now, you did have a project where you helped somebody get a well so they could have clean... Well, can you tell us about that?
Correct. That was in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the members of the Rotary Club that I'm in is a Kenyan from Kenya.
Oh.
And he still has family in the original village. Mm-hmm. And so he has been interested, obviously, in bringing water there. His mother had a orphanage in that village, and she took in kids and helped raise them. In fact, when we were over, he and I were over there looking at the prospect of putting a well in the village, there was a wedding, and he said, "Do you want to go to this wedding?" And I said, "Sure, that'd be great," because I'd never been to a wedding there. And the groom's name was the same last name. And I said to him, "You didn't tell me, you know, that you had a nephew," because he was pretty young. He said, "Well, in Kenya, when a family takes another child in, that child takes the name of the adopting family."
Mm-hmm.
And so there are
this orphanage all
there
happened.
Are Oyomas all over Kenya, apparently.
Because
that's his
of
last
orphanage?
Name. Yeah, because uh-huh. of that, because of that orphanage. And so he and I... as I say, looked at the well, and he also has a project for getting kids into school there, tuition.
So how did you get a well built? I mean, who did you call on to...
Well, you call on local people.
To do actual digging.
To do the actual digging. Uh-huh. And you have local Rotarians, and so they know the contractors. And that's the key about Rotary, is you have somebody on the ground that cares about the situation, who is familiar with Rotary principles.
Now, is that all volunteer? Do you pay for labor or just equipment?
No, we would... some of it is volunteer. Some mm-hmm. of them are Rotarians. But most of the time, you pay a person who's in the business of drilling wells.
Uh-huh.
And depending on the type of soil that you have, you might have a need for a different type of well. And so this well would provide water so that normally the women and the girls wouldn't have to walk... Mm-hmm. 2 miles each way to carry water, which is unbelievable.
It is. I mean, especially in a modern Western society like we live in, where you just turn on a tap.
Exactly.
Walking a block would seem to be an imposition.
Right.
That is amazing that people do that.
And, of course, what that means is they don't go to school either.
Oh, yes.
Because they're spending their day hauling water.
So now, did Charlene go on these trips with you?
She did not go on the trip to Kenya with me. I went a couple of times on that trip, and she did not go with me on that trip. We recently got back from a project in Mexico, mm-hmm. which is called Project Amigo. And this is a project that two Rotarians who lived in California just decided to sell their business and move to this village that they had visited, mm-hmm. and they've been down there for 20 years, and they basically do scholarships for the students there. And we were there a week that's called Literacy Week. They have Vision Week and other weeks, mm-hmm. but we were there for Literacy Week, which meant that we took some clothes down with us, and then they had books that they had purchased or had contributed to the Project Amigo, and as a result, we went out to the schools and had the kids read to us, and that was really a great experience.
So you really do make an impact all over.
That's right.
Wonderful. So you do all this, obviously, with Charlene's admiration and blessing.
Correct.
Yes. So as opposed to a wife who could be, rancorous that her husband is paying attention to something else. I mean, this is important one mate to have the other's support and blessing.
Yes,
so
very
who gets
much.
Your love letter today?
I'm sorry?
Who would get your love letter today?
Well, I think Charlene would get the love letter.
Now, have you written one yet? Or
I have not.
Okay, can we start to?
We're going to have to.
Okay, good. So what do you think makes a really good love letter? Let me just ask you.
Honesty.
Yes.
Emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And... I'm not sure what
okay,
else.
Okay, I'm just going to say specifics.
Okay.
A really good
right.
love letter. You know, if you get a love letter from somebody, well, let's say you want to write a love letter to somebody, you want to take into account, of course, something about what that person would like to hear
mm-hmm.
and what you would like to say, but specifics about that person, specific memories.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a nickname for her? Or do you call her Charlene?
I call her Chief.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay. So, you know, that's always a nice way to start. Nicknames are nice.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want her to know? Have you ever written her a love letter before?
I wrote her many, many while we were dating.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And her mother saved them, but I haven't seen them recently. So.
Oh, that would be interesting for you to look at them.
Yeah, it would be.
Because you get to see a little bit about who you were at that And I'm guessing that she hasn't looked at them in a long time either.
I think that's right.
If her mother has them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that would make a nice anniversary date.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it? Okay, so what do you want her to know?
I want her to know that I love her for being who she is.
Ah, okay. And right there is your opening to say who she is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And she is a kind, gentle, and patient person.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who is willing to listen and listen and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And to comment when you ask for suggestions.
Oh, good. That must mean that you're a good listener also.
Well, I'm not as good as she is.
Mm-hmm. But do you take suggestions?
I do, particularly from her, because I've come to learn over the years that she has an insight that I don't have.
Now, wouldn't that be good to say that just like that?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those parenthetical things we forget to put in our letters, but that's what makes a letter great and will kind of validate all that she is. Okay, go ahead. What else?
Well, as I said, she's a great cook.
Mm-hmm. So putting down some of your favorite dishes would be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And she was a wonderful, wonderful mother to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Very supportive. Understood what their needs were, I think, long before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And was able to communicate those to me in a way that didn't cause me to... push back, I guess, for want of a better term.
How did she do that? If you could put it into words.
I want to say subtly, but that doesn't really answer your question. It's just in her manner of understanding the children and knowing how to convey ideas to me and how I should respond.
So she let you know how you should respond, or she left that to you?
A little of both.
Okay.
A little of both.
So you've got wonderful memories and specific things. And the gift, I think, of a love letter like that is that you were paying attention all these years, that you were listening.
Well, that may be true, but I don't think it's until some recent years that I came to appreciate all of those.
That could be. But when you put it all in a letter and you're looking backwards, the message she gets is, well, maybe it was only recently that I knew he was listening.
Mm-hmm.
But look at this. He was listening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a gift. So what kind of stationery will you use? I like to ask that because I think it's
what
important.
What kind of stationery?
Yes.
I don't.
See, you haven't thought of that, right?
Probably be an email.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Okay.
Bad idea.
No, nothing wrong with email. But don't you want something that she'll have permanently?
Oh, well, I think that's true, too.
In your handwriting.
Well, not if you've seen my handwriting.
Well, I have.
You
actually
have? Oh, that's right.
And it's not too terrible for a letter. But if you can't, and you need to do it on the computer, can you put a P.S. or something, your signature, something in your handwriting?
Oh, sure.
Because your grandchildren will see that.
Right.
And it'll be a treasure to them.
Great
okay.
idea.
So what kind of stationery? Something her favorite color, your favorite color?
Oh, it'd be her favorite color and something that would be feminine, I think.
Okay, because you could go either way. You could do your favorite color and something really masculine.
Yeah.
So when she sees the envelope, she'll know it's from you right away.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose her favorite things, then that's kind of a tribute to your thinking about her even more.
Right.
So will you mail it?
I'd probably stick it under her pillow.
Okay, and where will you be when she finds it? Do you think?
Probably out of the house.
Okay. Do you see the value in that?
I do. It just gives her some time, I guess.
Yes.
To think about it.
Because even though you wrote it and you know what's in it, reading a love letter is private.
Right.
She may need time to absorb it. Excuse me. And of course, if you're standing there when we give a love letter to somebody, if that person feels obligated to respond, it's too much of a burden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, do you have grandchildren?
We do. We have five.
How old?
They range from 9 to a little over 3.
So someday, they're going to find these letters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe their children. And it'll be an important history for them. The way you are able to love and the way you are and who you are is part of their history.
Mm-hmm.
And if you found, if you found a letter from your great-grandparents right now, would you not consider that an instructive treasure?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay. So I'm glad you're going to do this. And you'll remember all these things you said.
All right.
So that you can do this when you get going. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming and doing this with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I want to encourage our listeners to write those letters and say what you feel while you still have the chance, because even though you can write to somebody who's no longer here, and that can be really satisfying in a lot of ways, isn't it better to say what you feel while the other person can absorb the love and gratitude that you have for what that person's contributed to your life? And I just also want to say that if you think that you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter really is a special occasion. And you should luxuriate it and find a nice quiet place where you can think about all the specifics, the qualities of the person you want to write to. Now, what about your children or grandchildren? Do you ever write to them?
No, I haven't.
Would it be nice, again, for their memories? I mean, I once read an article, and a man had written that he and his wife had all the love in the world, but he didn't have anything in her handwriting. And he was so sad about that. And it would have been so easy if she had thought of it over her lifetime to write him a card every now and then. Just to say, I'm so proud of you. I mean, it's in particular with grandchildren, I'm so proud of you that you did this. And you're such a wonderful boy, such a wonderful girl. And just every once in a while, we should write to our grandchildren. And somebody will keep those letters for them.
Oh, I'm sure that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they'll have something of a treasure from you forever, long after you're gone. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.